terms of our agenda that was circulated, there is five items. Now, members, we sit with a bit of a logistical issue regarding 12:30. There's apparently another committee, very important committee of parliament that wants to meet. This venue from 12:30 till 2:30. So we will have to be quite efficient in terms of time management. But I think what we will do, we will monitor it. If some of the items we have to stand over the next week, we'll just have to do it. Now, in terms of our program this morning, we resolved last week to call the Provincial Board of Commissioners, and we'll speak to that later, so that will be the first item. Then we will have a briefing by SACS and the Provincial Commissioners on the DBA, and as well on the, by the Civilian Secretariat on the implementation of the DBA. And then we've also asked IPID to reflect on the past implementation of the DBA. Of course, it's Women's Month. We all celebrated Women's Day, and I mean, in terms of the report back to the complaints we receive as members, there's a lot of issues regarding the DBA we need to focus on today, so we'll debate that in detail. We also have a briefing from the Legal Resources Center, as well as the Women's Skills Center. Then, the last item of the day will be the DPCI on the policy guidelines for priority offences. That document was distributed to all members. Members will remember the constitutional for judgment, and just to get a sense of what the DPCI are currently, what are they doing with regard to the implementation of the policy guidelines. So members, that's more or less the program for today. Now, with regard to the first item, before I start, before the meeting commenced, I indicated to the National Commissioner, I think it will be appropriate for her to excuse herself at this point in time, so that we can deal with the item effectively with the Provincial Commissioners, and we will again pull it back, again present the issues on DBA and discuss that in detail. So thank you for that. Before I start with my introduction, I will just give an opportunity to the Deputy Minister of Police for input at this stage.
Thank you very much, Jackson, for inviting us to this meeting for this specifically said item. Maybe I should also indicate that I am speaking today, so the Minister won't be joining us in the cabinet. So I'm here presenting the Minister for myself and the Minister. As per your indication in your request, I need to put it to the committee to say that we as the ministry were never consulted about the media statements that you read from the newspapers, and also not even about the media interviews, radio interviews about support who whenever consulted with regard to that. Because to our mind, we also discussed this as the minister that this is not for the first time that we had a national commissioner who is challenged with what is happening, president to establish a commission, this and that. But was never a time before when the police made such statements, even with the former one, Hitler. There was never a time. So it was difficult for us then, Chairperson, really, to respond to your letter. Hence, we said that it's better that I come here in front of the committee and explain to the committee that we are not part of that. We are not aware. We saw it on the media like yourselves. We listen to the radios like yourselves. And unfortunately, when this thing happened, the committee out there, they called us as leadership. But unfortunately, we couldn't respond. Hence, said that we are happy that you called us to this meeting. To put it this way, because the police law themselves had to be not consulted, and I'm happy because the nine provincial commissioners are here. They have, because they are part of the board, they are the ones who form the board, they have to respond themselves. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. We appreciate. I'm now going to give an opportunity for the members to introduce themselves, then I'm going to allow the police delegation to introduce themselves, and then I'll go to the introduction.
Good morning, I'm Diane Kolobarnard, member of the Portfolio Committee. Goeiemôre dames en here, my naam is Engie Mwiwa, as ek is alert van die komitee, dankie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Zakele Mbele, member of the committee. Morning, Chair. Morning, everybody. My name is Rismat Maula. Thanks.
Morning, Chair. My name is Timile Maula, and we will support the program. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. Person, Mabija Libohane, member of this committee.
Goeiemôre, ek is Pieter Groenewald, ek is lid van die komitee en agter ons kom ek in die kraam.
Good morning, Chair, I'm A.M. Reiki Mam, I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you, it's just calling maybe the MMI Institution Delegation.
Okay, good morning, Minister, Dr. Chair. I'm President KJ, you told me, the Deputy National Commissioner for Operation. Thank you.
Lieutenant General Nobubele Mbekela, Deputy National Commissioner Corporate Service Management in the South African Police Service. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Member, Lieutenant General Masemola, Provincial Commissioner Mpoko.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Lieutenant General Nida, the Provincial Commissioner of the City. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Simon, the Provincial Commissioner of Effect.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Lieutenant General Basson, I'm the Provincial Commissioner of the Northern Cape.
Good morning, Chair, and the Honourable Members. I'm Lieutenant General Mark, the Provincial Commissioner of Mpumalanga.
Good morning, Chair, and the Honourable Members. I'm late, Major General. To see the particular, the acting provincial commissioner of the Western Cape.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, Major General Sumali, acting provincial commissioner, Norwich.
Good morning, Chair, Deputy Minister, the Honorable Members. I am Major General K.E. Jula. I'm the acting provincial commissioner, KZN.
Morning, Chair. I am Brigadier van Rooy.
I think the DMA delegation, let's wait for later. Is there any other signatories to that statement who's also in the room? Let's hear from there.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister. I'm Lieutenant General Mkiwa, Provincial Commissioner Gauteng.
The national spokesperson, you issued the statement.
Deputy Minister, Chair, my name is Solomon Makale, I'm the Head of Communication.
Right, thank you for that introduction. Now, members will remember because it's Honourable Molabats.
Thanks, Chair. And can we find out where is the Provincial Commissioner of KZN?
Honourable Chair, the Provincial Commissioner of KwaZulu-Natal is on the study, and it is represented by the Deputy Provincial Commissioner for Operations, General Silva. Thank you.
Honorable. Chairperson, that is not acceptable. The acting commissioner, he supported the statement, or was it the commissioner? It was explicitly said that the commissioner should be here, even if the person is on leave. So it's not unacceptable for the committee, as far as I'm concerned, that the person is not here.
Yeah, I think for the purpose of our proceedings, we won't interact with the acting provincial commissioner of KZN for that purpose. The current person is a person who saw that, and that is the provincial commissioner of KZN, and we'll deal with it at the late stage. DM?
Can I advise that because the provincial commissioner is not here, you must remember that there was a statement precisely written by herself without the board. Therefore, you can invite her for next week, just off your list, to come and explain herself.
No, we'll definitely will come to follow up and deal with that. I just see some members' hands.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to know how many people here. Because I know that there's only Western Cape that's acting, but I hear that there's two or three.
The Northwest, I think, is also acting.
Oh, it's acting. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Honorable Mabija, are you fine? Right, thank you for that, Honorable Members. DM?
Sorry, Chairperson.
Honourable Colonel Kinsler. Now, just for clarity, Jefferson, so do we accept that the acting commissioners is here, that they also support the statement?
Yeah, this we can give them opportunity to speak for themselves, but I believe that's what we received, that is indeed the case. Right. Honourable members will remember, and I must go through this, that we just understand the context. Now, members will remember that the Honourable President of the Republic, President Zuma, released the Marikana report in August 2012. Now, as a portfolio committee, we issued statements on 25 June. And I think it's important for the record that I just refer to that again. Now, the Portfolio Committee on Police welcomes President Zuma's release of the long-awaited report into the tragic incident that occurred in Marikana in August 2012. The committee said that it will have to study the report thoroughly in order to follow up on technical and operational recommendations such as the need to improve public order policing and the required controls and command protocols. Efforts to improve public order policing, dematerialization and professionalization of the police service have been priorities of the Portfolio Committee on Police since taking office in the beginning of the fifth parliament in 2014. The recommendation by the Commission on the Expert Panel with international and local role players to advance in public order policing is fully supported by the Portfolio Committee. The committee has highlighted the need to ensure the urgent implementation of recommendations of the report in relation to the conduct of members of SAPS. It also takes note of the processes to follow in towards improving the manner policing is conducted in the country. On the matter involving concerns, and that's very important for our discussion today, over police leadership and its decision making, the committee said the importance of having credible and effective police leadership cannot be overemphasized. The committee will in this regard await the outcomes of the processes announced by the President. I'm going to repeat that. The committee will in this regard await the outcomes of the processes announced by the President. We further added that the committee will between July and August 2015 call the Minister of Police to table plans on how he intends to monitor the implementation of the recommendations the committee made with regards to the SAPS. The committee sympathized all family members whose relatives perished in August 2012 during the Marikana massacre. We also said we understand that we can never replace the lives lost on the day. We can only make sure that incidents such as these never happen again by putting preventive measures in place. Now that was the statement by the committee. Then, subsequently, there was various statements, and we'll come to that during the course of the morning, that was issued by the national spokesperson of the SAPS and also by the provincial commissioners. And apparently, and we want to give confirmation also this morning, it was also distributed to all SAPS members countrywide. Now, last week, we discussed this issue in the committee, and the following statement was issued by the committee. In this statement, we referred to the previous statement I just referred to, but we also said the following. We then want to record our displeasure with a statement that was issued by the Lieutenant General Solomon Khale on 1-8-2015 with the heading, the SAPS Board of Commissioners fully supports General Riaf Yeha. Our observation is that the issuing of the statement is unfortunate and not appropriate in the current set of circumstances. While the Office of the President is considered the representations made by the relevant party with regard to the recommendations made by the Farm Commission, it's not up to certain members of SAPS management to become involved in the overly public discourse or to indirectly engage in lobbying on behalf of a party or parties who are the subject of official process. This process initiated by the President should be respected. The committee would also like to remind all SAPS members of the Code of Conduct that states, I commit myself to creating a safe and secure environment for all people in South Africa by participating in all endeavours aimed at addressing the root causes of crime, preventing all acts that may threaten the safety or security of any community, investigating criminal conduct that endangers the safety or security of the community, bringing the perpetrator to justice. In carrying out this commitment, I shall at all times uphold the Constitution and the law, take into account the needs of the community, recognize the need of the SAPS and my employer, and cooperate with all interested parties in the community and the government at every level. Close quote. therefore the committee's of firm view that statements of the said officers blur the line between the role of civil servants, police officers, and the executive consisting of elected representatives. The role of the police is defined in section 2.3 of the Constitution. The object of the police service are to prevent, combat, investigate crime, to maintain public order, to protect and secure the inhabitants of the public and the property, and to uphold and enforce the law. The political responsibility for the police, according to section 061 of the Constitution, is with the cabinet minister responsible for police. And section 207 is the president is head of the national executive in terms of the appointment of the national commissioner. And we also close that statement by saying the Constitution and the NDP envisage a professional police service that is subject to civilian control and oversight. The committee will not support a situation where this principle is compromised or watered down. Hence, the committee will call on the said officers to appear before the committee of interest of all the quote. So that was the statements that was issued by the committee at that stage. But maybe to really emphasize the seriousness of our discussion this morning, just to refer to the statement or in terms of the findings that was made by the Parliament Commission, and which specifically also refers to the role of the National Management Board as well as the National Commissioner. Now, in terms of the recommendations of the Parliament Commission, there was a recommendation that the President must, consider the appointment of a Section 9 Commission in terms of the Public Service, the South African Police Service Act. And maybe just to refer to that specific section. And it also refers to Section 8. Loss of confidence in National or Provincial Commissioner. If the National Commissioner has lost the confidence of the Cabinet, the President may establish a board of inquiry consisting of a judge of the Supreme Court as chairperson and two other suitable persons to inquire into the circumstances that led to the loss of confidence, compile a report, and make recommendations. And misconduct by incapacity of the National Commission is also referred to in Section 9 of the SAP Act. So, in terms of the context of the environment in which we are, that the representations of the National Commission was to be submitted to the President before the end of August. Now, a statement that was issued by the relevant SAPS members was just the day after that deadline. Before we go to discussion by members, we just maybe consider the factual issues we just want to get clarity on in terms of the statement. The first issue is on whose instruction was that statement issued, Lieutenant General Makhale. Then the individual provincial commissioners, and we want each and everybody to confirm on their own course, whether they did it of their own act or was they instructed to issue that specific statement. Then, in a radio interview, General Bekela indicated that there was a meeting that was held where there was a decision made to issue the statement. Where was that specific meeting? Where did it take place? When was it taken place? Can we just get maybe details of that as well? That is just to start our discussion, so over to the relevant role players. Yeah.
Can we also be provided with a minute of that particular meeting?
Yes. We'll come to that. But let's first give the relevant role players an opportunity to indicate the process that was followed with the issuing of those statements. Right, over to the members.
Okay, as I indicated, I'm the head of communications in the South African Police Service. There was a meeting of the BOC where during the meeting I was then requested to prepare a statement. I was given the content of what to put into that statement. I subsequently circulated the statement to the members of the BOC. There were corrections that were made, and the statement was eventually approved.
General,
first aspect, if you come to the committee, please follow the protocols when addressing the presiding chair. That is the first issue. The second issue is who issued that instruction that that statement must be prepared. That is the material question. You're not answering it, please.
Chairperson, when I was invited to the meeting of the BOC, there was a general discussion by all the members of the BOC. And in that discussion, all the members said that we need to issue a statement to correct some of the issues that were being raised in the media with regard to the leadership of the South African Police Service.
Right, let's get other views. Yes, gentlemen.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Chairperson, I'm having a document here. With your permission, if I can ask the Cradle Stain to come and hand over to you, because there are annexures and the report. Firstly, Honourable Chairperson, on the 26th of July, the following newspapers reported on the following headings. The Sunday Independent...
Jenna, sorry, I'm going to stop you there. You are talking about now media and news reports. We were not interested in that. What is the material issue at the end today? Is a statement that was issued that undermined the process that was initiated by the President of the Republic. That is the material issue. What appeared in the media that is not really the issue at hand. So we want to know who was part of that discussion, where did it take place, who gave instruction. That's the material issue. If you can address that, we'll appreciate that.
Honourable Chairperson, the statement that I issued on the 26th was talking to the newspaper reports of the 26th. And I want to quote verbatim. The Gauteng management has noted various media reports in today's newspapers regarding Marikana and overall management of the SARS. From the perspective of the Gauteng SARS management, there is no mutiny in the leadership team. So this was reported responding to the media report, and we say that to the best of our knowledge, management has made submission to the Marikana Commission. There has never been any discussion regarding us as the leadership team of SARS distancing ourselves from the submission made by management to the Marikana Commission. As management team, our focus is on providing emotional support to policemen and women from Gauteng who are deployed in Marikana. As a leadership, we are fully committed to ensuring that we significantly reduce crime in the province. On the first part, Honourable Chairperson, we are responding to the newspaper.
In general, that is a big problem, because in terms of the SAPS protocols, there's only one person who actually can issue statements, and that's Lieutenant General Mahale. I presume then that statement of yourself was discussed by the Gauteng management, or not?
It was, Chairperson.
On what date? Can we have the minutes?
Chairperson, it was not...
Can we have the minutes of that meeting where the decision was made?
I think
we move on to this committee as soon as possible. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Let's go to the other members.
Chairperson, can I go to the next question?
No. What we want from you, you've indicated before this committee that there was a decision by the Gauteng provincial government to issue, perhaps provincial management to issue such a statement. So we want the minutes of that meeting as soon as possible. So
I've not asked on the BOC if I can be given an opportunity later, but it's fine.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members of the House, I think I want to indicate very clearly that there was never an instruction that is coming from anybody to the issue, of the statement. But the members of the board of the BOC, including us, that were in the meeting, we found it necessary as a leadership of the organization because of the negativity that was persisting, I mean, in terms of the organization, to maintain stability in the organization by ensuring that we communicate to the, I mean, to the members and indicate that we are never part of certain issues that are being mentioned. So I just want to emphasize that probably I will come, I mean, at a certain point. There was never an instruction, but the statement was issued based on purely administrative principles of indicating that we need to talk to somebody.
No, what about you? Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. To whom was this statement directed to?
The statement was, I mean, was issued for the members of the South African Police Service. And it was meant, I mean, it was also meant for the other clientele that is outside, because there were public statements that were already sitting in the public platform indicating that there is mutiny and they are, as senior management, we are not supporting. And we had to allay the fears of, I mean, of the members of the South African Police Service.
Got a lot of hands. Let's start on that side.
Yep.
First of all, one more about, and then we'll start on that side.
Thank you, Chair. Is that how you communicate with us through the media? Right? Is that how you do it?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think my first question is going to be to the spokesperson for SAFS. Who initiated the meeting? How were you invited to this meeting? Who invited you to this meeting? Can you confirm if all the commissioners that are present today were in fact present at that meeting? That's the first thing. The second thing is, just, I would like to know from the commission here, do you believe as this, of this committee, that you had the authority to issue a statement on a media statement, knowing very well the protocol that you need to follow? And I want you to elaborate on the issue of what instability was creating in your province, say, that needed you to, as a collective, make such a statement, taking into consideration that the president has already commented on this, there are processes in place. Why prematurely did we take this route? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to ask one question that I do not understand, because SAFS has got political heads. And then I would like to understand, how on earth do you as DOC agree upon 1, 2, 3 and you go out to publicize that without consulting your political heads, that is the minister and the deputy minister? I just want to be clarified there, because I'm not working in the staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, who holds the meeting, and what was the agenda of the meeting, and why do you call that meeting, and how do you communicate in class now? I'm having a problem now, because your communication now is getting out of hand. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Jim. So, firstly, we have some differences here, because the communication officer, and I listened very carefully, said I was called to a meeting and instructed to issue the statement. Now, General Magere said nobody instructed. So, now who's correct and who's not correct? And the single question is, because she also said that it was meant to the members of SAPS to ensure them. Now she says, okay, also for the public. But you said it's meant for the members. How does she then, can I say, see the issue of the statement, which is a contradiction of the protocols? Because everybody knows that if you want to communicate with the members of SAPS, you don't do it by means of the media. And we want explicit explanation on that specific reason. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chairperson, Deputy Minister. Without revolving in one issue, I think what is missing here is it's a protocol procedures to say trust is a professional entity, and if everybody will have to communicate the manner in which he or she understands the issues, then there is going to be a lot of contradictions, like it is happening now. That, can you imagine in this meeting, in this hall, everybody will say, write this, write this, because in the end, it's a mass instruction, which nobody is there to be held responsible for that particular instruction. So I don't think it is correct to say there is nobody who has issued an instruction. Somebody is there. But I think it's just a solidarity for the wrong things that happened. So I think somebody must stand up and say, I am responsible for this because of one to the Chairperson. Thanks.
Honorable Karabon.
First of all, Chair, I wonder if you could just clarify for me. I find it very awkward to refer to Solomon Mahale by Lieutenant General because it's a rank that does not exist. So it's always very awkward. I see you call him General, other people call him other things. Perhaps you could clarify what exactly to call him. On 1st of April 2010, 14 ranks were created. This is not one of them. So it's a fabricated rank, and I find it very bizarre. Obviously, as the communications head, he has line manager. I would like to know who that line manager is, because that will be the person who instructed him to attend the meeting. That will be the person who signed off on documents. That will be the person where the buck should stop. So I think we need to find out who his direct boss is. I don't believe in any of these provincial commissioners. Also, I find it curious that in the statement there was a line saying it must be mentioned as an aside that none of the SAS management structures have taken a resolution not to support the submission made at the Marikana Commission of Inquiry. Now, to me, that is, in its utterance, saying, but we could if we wanted to. They would never have that right. So even to include that in the statement is a subliminal threat that actually they may decide to ignore the findings of that entity. I do believe, and I was searching for the date, that in fact this current police commissioner has used the tactic once before, some years ago. I will find the reference for you when, in fact, the provincial commissioner once again came out and supported her, as though they are the National Police Commissioners Union. That's absolutely bizarre. What are you thinking? This is not a union. It's not a trade union. And to come out in support of a commissioner who's facing a process which will run its course is shameful. We all know that the majority of you owe your jobs to the current National Police Commissioner. So what you have done is beyond outrageous. It's beyond outrageous. I don't see in your faces anyone understanding the severity of what has happened here. You have stepped clearly into the realms of politics. I was shocked. I received a statement that was said to me from people all over the country. All over the country, everyone is looking at the Provincial Police Commission saying, what is going on? And in fact, they're thanking the Peace Portfolio Committee, and I have again to commend our chairperson for raising this issue. We are standing here united, saying, what on earth were you thinking? And we now have to work out what the results will be of this determination by someone who instructed Solomon or Mahale, whatever his rank is, to put this statement out. I am personally horrified, Democratic Alliance horrified by what happened here. And I don't know if what they've done was actually legal. And I think that has to be looked into too. Thank you.
Honourable Mbele and then Honourable Mbassa. Thank you, Chairperson. Two questions from my side. First is, just in terms of the context in which the discussion and the decision that's resulted in the statements was,
So can I just get clarity and also this to alleviate my own ignorance? Chairs the Board of Commissioners meetings. Is it the National Police Commissioner? And if so, what was her role? What was her influence in the what we've been told was a general discussion that resulted in a series of decision to issue the statement? So that's my first question. And my second question is, as I understand so far of the inputs we've received, the rationale or the and the reasoning for issuing the statements was something along the lines of it was found necessary to maintain stability in the organization as a response to negativity in the media about the state of the SAPS and to allay the fears of the members about the falsehood of the new senior rumors. Now, Honorable Philip also really asked the one part of the question, which is why, if that was the intention, if it was inwardly focused, was it necessary to do through the media as opposed to an internal circular? But my particular question is just looking again at the statements. On one level, and as a former media officer in the Western Cape government, I'm quite familiar with having read SAPS statements. You know, SAPS statements seem to have a formula of being very factual and very objective. So it states, you know, this and this, stats and figures, dates and times, locations, etc. And much of the content of this is pointing to objective facts and developments, you know, which speak to some aspects of improvements in the performance of the SAPS. So by painting the picture that way, it does speak to the intention that was mentioned, that it's about allaying fears about falsehoods as they were received by the Board of Commissioners in the media. And I was speaking to integrity rating of senior management, the frontline service delivery program, all the things that we mentioned that are established in the pipeline and underway to improve the performance of the SAPS. I understand that. My question is, why does all of that, especially in light of the background that the president's inquiry process was being initiated and him requesting the police commissioner to make her submission, why did all of that objective, neutral information about the performance of the SAPS, of SAPS to address what you perceived as falsehoods about the SAPS, why does that have to be tagged onto a very subjective and a very and move that seeks to influence the process of saying that you now support the National Police Commissioner? Why could not have been, this is being said, we perceive it as false, these are the facts, and that's it.
I did make a reference, I've now found it, if I may. On the 14th of November 2013, Solomon Makhale, who had just 3 months' experience in the SAPS, made a statement titled, SAPS Board of Commissioners Reassures Communities of Police Commitments of Fighting Crime. The statement was retaliating to the case of tipping off of the Provincial Commissioner of the Western Cape, and in it he stated, the Provincial Commissioners have full confidence in the National Commissioner. Similar vein, totally out of line. So it has happened before.
Honourable Molibus.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe at this point we need to remind ourselves of their core mandate as described by the South African Police Act, which is to protect the citizens of this country and not get entangled in politics. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, seeing that you go for a second round. Chairperson, I also want to come back to a paragraph or two in the statement, and the specific one that has been raised by the Honourable Bayankola Arnott, and I read it, it said, it should also be mentioned that none of the SAPS management structures have taken a resolution not to support the submission made at the Marikana Commission of Inquiry. That means that they support the submissions they've made at the Marikana Commission. And I'd like to know from the commissioners, the finding of the commission was that the commissioner was not honest. She didn't make a full disclosure of what was happening. So what they actually say is that the commission is completely wrong, or they say that we support the fact that the national commissioner was not honest with the commission and that she did not make a full disclosure. My second part, Chairperson, is it is also said in the statement, when the national commissioner joined the SAPS, the crime intelligence division was in the intensive care unit, with many issues being exposed in the media. Now, if the intention was, with this statement, to help the members of SAPS to save the image of SAPS, how on earth do you think you save the image of crime intelligence if you make a statement confirming that it was actually an intensive care unit? It doesn't make sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members, but I think also very important, we need to know exactly the date of that meeting that took place and whether this item was on the lips. Because it seems from the version of General Bekela, it was just a rose. There was a general feeling that there must be such a statement. I just wanted an indication whether that was also on the agenda of that specific meeting. Right, let's go to the responses. Thank you, Chairperson. I was asked a question by the Honourable Member as to how did I get invited to the meeting. I'm not a member of the BOC because it's a structure that is set up by the Constitution, but I am invited at the regular meetings of the BOC. The other question was, who was in the meeting? All the provincial commissioners were in the meeting. Lieutenant General Zulu, who is the acting divisional commissioner for crime intelligence, was in the meeting. Deputy National Commissioner Bekela was in the meeting, and so was Deputy National Commissioner General Sithole in the meeting. Again, the question of where did the instruction come from? As I indicated, there was a discussion by the members of the BOC, and from that discussion, there was agreement that such a statement should be issued. Then there was a question as to my rank, Chair, and who do I report to? I was appointed with effect from the 1st of June 2013 as a Lieutenant General heading communications in the South African Police Service. My office or my appointment is in the office of the National Commissioner, therefore I report to her.
Other responses? Your follow-up.
Chairperson, sorry, no, we cannot continue like this. The person just said, and he explained the process, but somebody, a human being, must have instructed him. And please can we get the name of that human being? Thank you. It's as simple as that.
Chairperson, there was not one person that came to me and said, Solomon Makgale, go and issue this statement. There was a discussion in the BOC, and the members of the BOC took a decision that a statement must be issued.
There's a lot of that. I'll start from that side.
Thank you, Chair. I think the person is really not answered. Where did it take place? When did it take place? Who instructed, who invited you to this meeting? You say more than one person gave you instruction. Who are those persons that gave you instructions? The agenda of that meeting that you were attending, what was it supposed to be? Was it primarily for this matter? Were there other issues? I think you need to elaborate so that we get a clear picture of what's happening here. Thank you.
Yes, Honourable Mbiza, Honourable Mbiza.
Thank you, Chairperson. I should think because when you say we were in a meeting, we discussed and we decided all of us to say so and so must go and make issue a statement. So it then means that did you spontaneously all of you say go and do this? I don't understand. We can sit in a meeting, but there's someone who will be giving the last decision of the decision, the discussion. So if there is no one, the person who issued the statement said it was the decision of the meeting. It's therefore you are the one who instructed yourself to do that. If there's no one who instructed you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mamula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Lieutenant General Mahale, don't run around the bush here. Because there's someone who told you that you must read the statement. Not all the members have said, please, will you please tell us? Because when I was asking who caused the meeting, they sent you SMSs to come to the meeting, or did they wrote the letter, what was the agenda, where are the minutes? That's what we're asking here. You must not keep going around the bush and telling us, everyone tell us, they are not going, we are the chairperson here, whom, if we have decisions here, he's the only one who can tell him that, chairperson, will you please go and tell the minister or the deputy minister to me? Not all of us we are going to talk to the minister or to the deputy minister. Please, let's be fair and honest here. Let's not make us too free to watch.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. General Makhaya, I say you, the people who were in the particular meeting, all said in unison, just like a choir. They said it once, you know. And my second question is, who was chairing this meeting? Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Chair. I think Honorable Mabitsa, let me to say, I think the general must accept that the statement comes from him, because he's failing to show or to indicate to us who gave him an instruction. Chair, it cannot be like in the soccer pitch where spectators will drive a bicycle to indicate that you must change a certain player. But even if that player will have to be replaced, the coach will take the responsibility to say, yes, I am convinced by spectators or supporters of my team, and therefore I will have to replace at that day. So the coach will take the blame of all the things or the credit which is going to happen at the end of the game. So I think the same goes to this issue, to say at least there must be somebody who is responsible to say, I'm going to make sure that this instruction is carried forward. He accepts to say that statement comes from him, is well and fine. Then we'll see what to do thereafter. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm very conscious of what this man is hired to do. He's using that job now on this committee. He has very carefully stated, he's not a member of the committee, but he was invited. He didn't tell us why. He claimed that all the provincial commissioners met, and he said who was there, but he did not say whether the National Police Commission was there or not. Now, I want direct, straight answers. Was the National Police Commissioner there? Yes or no? Did she instruct you to be there? Yes or no? Did she, as your direct line manager and the accounting officer of the SACH, sign off on the statement? Yes or no? That's all I want. That's all I think we need. Don't spin the commission.
Thank you, Jim. I'm partly covered by what Honourable Kulabana just asked, but it's the comments and then question I want to ask is, from my understanding and certainly from my past experience, a media officer is a functionary of a principal. You never issue a statement without the sign of your principal, and if you do, it's definitely belongs to media service, because that's not how the job works. And this in springboards from my question about if the National Commissioner was at the BOC meeting, was she chairing, does she chair, if so, what was her role in that discussion and that decision? And all of us, Honourable Kulabana has asked if the National Commissioner signed off. But whether or not she was in that meeting, and I still lack that answer, did she sign on that statement? I have to believe she had to, if you are the media officer in the National Commissioner's office, and the line function operates that way.
The question is whether the National Commissioner was present in the meeting. I just omitted her because, you know, speaking of the people that were present. Indeed, the National Commissioner was present in the meeting. The other question is, how did I get invited to the meeting? The invitation is sent from the office of the National Commissioner, and when the meeting, it's a regular meeting of the Board of Commissioners. When that invitation goes out to the provincial commissioners, I am included in there. The question, as I indicated earlier, how the statement was approved, there was a discussion, the statement was drafted, was then circulated to all the provincial commissioners to look at the statement and to give me feedback, which they did. I'm not sure if I'm missing any other question.
So it was in effect the same thing as a coordinated effort and not an individual process, but that's what you actually said.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Did the National Police Commissioner sign off on the statement? Your boss, yes?
The National Commissioner did... Oh, sorry. The Chair, the National Commissioner did not sign off on this particular statement.
That is very, very strange. Because that raises a bigger issue. The issue we've raised in the NDP, the White Paper, a professional police service. I mean, that is just not acceptable. Accountability starts at the top. If it's about command control at all levels, it must be accountability. It can't be just free for all. And that's our evaluation of this morning's responses. It's honorable, what about you?
Just a second. I'm sitting here, I'm shocked. You are saying you had the National Commission in that particular meeting, sitting in front of the provincial commissioner. Where on earth do you expect them to say they don't support him when you see him next week? What is one of him? It's very weird, sir.
Thank you, Jen. Chair, there's one clarity. General just said, well, I see on the
statement.
Well, let's talk about General, because I see on the statement it's Lieutenant General, so General, enjoy it as long as you can. What I want to know for clarity is, he just said that after he had drafted the statement, it was circulated to the provincial commissioners. Now, was that after the meeting? Because all the commissioners were in the meeting. Why did he have to circulate it again? Because I expect that if that was the discussion, in the BOC at least, that would mean that this is the wording we want in the statement. Why wasn't it given to him then? Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay. I want to start off by asking a direct question, because I think it's not been answered. Did the National Commissioner ask you to make the statement? That's the first thing. Did did the National Commissioner directly ask you to attend this meeting? My concern is that you are appearing before the Portfolio Committee on Police and all revolves around the media statement, but you choose not to bring the minutes of that meeting, the resolution of that meeting asking you to make a statement. And I can't seem to understand that, because that would have been the first bit of evidence that you should be providing to us today. Now, it appears to me from what I can see that you are protecting someone. Can you tell us this meeting that took place, you say you normally invite to this meeting, were they scheduled meetings that you had once a month or once in 6 months? Was this a special meeting? When was the last meeting, the one after that? Because I'm trying to establish whether this meeting was specifically for the purpose of making the statement. And I want to urge that we are going to verify this at some stage, so rather we have the information as it is. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to ask this question. Was this meeting of the POC or was the scheduled meeting, or was it called for the Marikana report? Or was it for the support of the National Commissioner? We want to know what was that meeting for. Because it seems
as
if it was an agent meeting.
Gentlemen, Chairperson, I just want to clarify the issue of the POC. I think that's the same point. The Board of Commissions is a statutory meeting, or is a meeting that is established in terms of the Act. That is the Board of Commissioners. The POC is one of the governance committees of the organization. You have the POC, you have the NMF, you have all the other committees, but the POC, is one of them. So that meeting has got scheduled meetings, which appear on the calendar of the organization in terms of the calendars of the meetings. And that meeting is a meeting with the provincial commissioners, together with identified members of the top management that have got a direct role to play in that. Although it is for 9 provincial commissioners, whenever they are discussing their issues, they go and they touch on the human resource issues, which then requires that somebody that is responsible for human resources should be part of that. The same thing with policing. The same thing with physical resources and finance. So that was a normal meeting that took place in the Mbopo. It was in the Mbopo because it usually rotates within the provinces. So that we are able to make sure that we afford an opportunity even to the deputy provincial commissioners of that particular province to also attend, so that they can get used and understand the issues of crime that are being discussed. That is a meeting that is chaired by the National Commissioner. But the National Commissioner was not a participant in the discussions that were discussing around the issue of the issue of the statement. And I think
General, I just want to come to that. Are you referring to the Mahuba's Kloof meeting? The Mahuba's Kloof meeting? Was that meeting held at Mahuba's Kloof? Now, you're telling, remember you before Parliament, and we asked for the minutes of that meeting. You are saying that the National Commissioner was not part of the discussion at all about anything regarding the statement. Are you saying that? Are you saying that?
Chairperson, the National Commissioner never issued an instruction.
No, a discussion.
It was a general discussion of the members.
I'm asking. You confirmed it was Makuba's Kloof, and I'm concerned. Nobody wanted to put that on the table where the meeting was held, but thank you for confirming that. Secondly, you're saying that the National Commissioner wasn't part of the discussion on issuing of the statement. Can you confirm that to the committee?
The Chairperson, the National Commissioner was not a participant in the discussions around the statement. We did discuss generally as members, in the meeting, in terms of the statement, but at that time, he was not a direct participant, although he served the meeting. And there is an agenda of, I mean, of our teaching.
Is the minutes available to us? The approved minutes?
The minutes of the, I mean, of the meeting are not there because they're always taken in terms of that. Whether the, I mean, the voice on the general discussion of the statement was captured in the meeting, that I cannot confirm.
What questions? Honorable
I'm shaking my head. We are sitting here and being told, first of all, every effort was made not to tell us that the National Police Commission was in that meeting. Every other person was detailed and not her. Slight, didn't know. Now we're hearing, yes, she was in the meeting. That was finally confessed. Now we're hearing, yes, she sat there while her praise singers worked out how to make her life better, how to tell the whole country and send it to every SANS member, every media house in the country, what a wonderful job she's doing. Up at the Marikana Commission, they can stand it, and we know what she said, and that's fine. No, we'll accept that. We know what the Marikana Commission said, word for word for word. You know what the Marikana Commission said, and that is why you put the statement out. And she sat there in the chair. She might not have actually spoken, and I'm quite sure if she did, it's been expunged from the minutes. But you all sat there, except for KZN, of course, didn't bother to pitch. You sat there, and you did a prayer singing exercise like you were their personal, private trade union, or army. Really, you expect me to accept that? No, no, this is outrageous, Chair.
Like, I don't know that General Mbegela, do you know where are you? You are here in front of us, members of parliament, where you are accounting to. And you tell us that the National Commissioner didn't participate. Well, as she was the chairperson of that meeting, and you said she was not the, I don't know what are you saying, a decision maker. What are you saying? What are you telling us? Please, you do disrespect us because you are accounting to us. You are not accounting anyway. It's us that we called you here to tell us the truth, what happened in that day. And please give us the minutes because I think you do have the minutes in your laptop anyway. And again, and will you please give us the date, all the dates of the POC meetings so that we can see the day that when you were sitting at was the day for the meeting. That's what we need here. We seem as if you are not respecting us. You are just talking like the media. We are not the media here. You are reporting to us. You must understand it. Thank you, Chairperson.
You know, sitting here, I'm shaking and I'm very disappointed. What we are witnessing here is precisely what is happening on the ground. Grassroots level politicians, our communities, the police gang against the community member. And this is what we are seeing here. And what do we expect in such? It means the whole such, the leadership is here, but they are chopping us from pillar to pillar. We are even getting confused because we are trying to dribble us rather than to be dribbled. Are we dribbling with another those pieces? And then for some of us, we are going to 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2,
that we do not know. But what we are seeing here is major subordinates are always doing this to our community members that we represent. Can you stop playing games, please?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I am really, I'm actually shocked. We're dealing with people at a very high level in this country, but what I'm hearing really shocks me. And I'm not surprised what my honourable colleague is saying is absolutely incorrect. That's what he would mention right now. When you talk about housing, when you talk about policies, the police, protect police at the expense of our community members, which is actually a shame. But I want to say that I'm also confused about participation, general participation, but not direct participation. I don't know. Participation is not really good. But can you give me a direct answer, gentlemen? If the commissioner, national commissioner, did not partake in that discussion around the national commissioner's issue, who will chair the meeting at that particular instance to discuss that matter? If you could give me a diagram.
Honorable
Grunewald
and Honorable
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think we can discuss this issue for the whole day. And it's going in circles and circles. Can I say to the General, I see it as an insult to this committee with what you just said. You're insulting the committee. In fact, you are insulting the South African Police Services because you are carrying a hand there that is supposed to be respected by the members of SAPS, and you are insulting them. Do you think that we are idiots? Do you think that the National Commissioner can be the chair of a meeting, doesn't say anything, and that we must believe that she's got nothing to do with it? With great respect, I now understand the following commission. You have learned well from your National Commissioner not to be honest, and I question your integrity, and I put it on the record. You're an insult to the South African Police Services.
You see, this reminds me of the Jekyll times, where the provincial commissioners did exactly this. But to show you that this has no bearing, he was being sentenced for 50 days. So it shows you that this was just an exercise.
Chairperson, much has been said about the minutes. I would ask that whoever took the minutes of that meeting be brought to this committee, because what minutes are going to be sent to us are going to be carefully sanitized. Any mention of the National Police Commissioner will be whisked out of them, and the only way we can get to it is if we personally speak to the person who took the minutes and say, were you instructed to remove certain items out of those minutes? Because I don't think we'll get anything near the truth. Certainly not by what we've done today.
Thank you, Chair. Two statements and one question. The first is, in terms of the information that we've just recently been told of how that discussion happened with the National Commissioner chairing, they've been genuinely participating, but not being direct participants, if I recall correctly. What that tells me, if I dial down my criticism to the lowest possible level, and that's quite a way to go right now, what it tells me is that she failed to chair the meeting properly, because if that discussion ensued, then she should have either paused it and said, I need not to be here for this, please have it at a separate forum, or recuse herself, in which case she would then not have been there, and this makes everybody's life a whole lot easier. So that in itself speaks to the leadership strategic acuity of the National Commissioner. Secondly, what's also been apparent is that a statement was issued from the office of the National Commissioner without the sign-off of the principal, which is against every known media and communications protocol that I can think of. Now that I think about it. But anyway, that itself speaks to managerial and procedural failings. And then I would just like to resurface again the question I asked earlier, because it does speak to quite a core issue about the statements. The content was largely objective and neutral, speaking to performance indicators and those kinds of organizational developments. Why was it tagged to a subjective position of supporting the National Commissioner? Why was it not simply the staff taking these steps and making this progress in improving and leave it there? Why did it become a subjective lobbying exercise for the National Commissioner?
Members may have a lot of action. I'm going to allow each one to for a response because the Audi rule applies in my committee. But very importantly, I also want to ask the following issue put on the table at that meeting, and the provincial commissioners or members of the management are welcome to make representations to my office in individual capacity to lunch, because I know they can't do it yet. But was there also at that meeting any other action discussed collectively apart from the media statement at that meeting? If I can just get the indication on that. issue. Based on your story, I'll give you this an opportunity.
Honorable members, I think I'm just going to take a piece of the question so that we try to lay the fundamental. The first thing I wanted to also confirm the date of the meeting took place on 15th and 16th of July. The 15th and 16th of July, there were scheduled days in terms of the calendar of the DOC. The DOC, in the same way as the National Management Forum, those two meetings, they take place in terms of designed calendars, which form part and parcel of the governance framework. Then, secondly, the DOC as a constitutional structure, it looks at the crime, it discusses the crime in the country, for which, as policing, we submit a crime report. One of the major discussions which was on the agenda was Operation Sierra and the total crime pattern analysis in the country. But we also then discuss resource and support-related matters that talk to the policing interventions that seeks to improve policing in the country. And the same structure like the NMF, an agenda gets circulated in time and in here. It also happens the same. But as the meeting takes place, there's also addition for AOB matters, additional matters. The subject under discussion is came in as part of additional matters. I don't want to say things that maybe would make the committee feel or we undermine or hide something, but I just wanted to quote a statement by the National Commissioner that she made in the meeting when the letter was proposed. She said, "I am conflicted in this particular subject. And for that reason, I'm not going to participate in the discussion." That's what she said. As the discussion was unfolding. Then the minutes, I also wanted to confirm to the community they are available. We do not, I think, have a problem making them available. The calendar also is available for the governance as well. I also want to
Did the meeting discuss any other collective action apart from the media statement regarding Maricom? I just want to know that, yes or no?
Yeah. I just want to start by saying, explain the
yes or no, yes or no, sir.
Yes, the other message from the agenda.
But regarding collective action regarding Maricom. So, can we also get...
Okay,
sure. Sorry, it's a point of order. It's a point of order. Well, it's actually clarity because you've asked the point of clarity. General Sitola has just said that the commissioner said I'm conflicted and she did not participate, but she was not in the chair. I just want to ask clarity on that. She was still in the meeting.
She was diligent, but she indicated she's conflicted.
Thank
you, Chairperson. Can we also get an assurance that nothing was removed from those minutes?
I'll come back to you. Just that other member also point on a motion.
Thank you, Chair. My only concern is that we're having this sort of an inquiry, but they have all the provincial commissioners here at the same time, and I don't know whether it's doing justice because it says it clearly was an evident here is that we're not going to get. Happening. It might have been best we did not have all commissioners with due respect at the same time so that we could identify. I can show this out that if we did follow the process, we may get different information from the commissioners. But I think on that particular question, if you could just directly your answer for us,
then who chaired the meeting and whether the commissioner chaired the meeting from the beginning to the end, which is what the commissioner normally does.
Right, did you just say take those clarifications in my question and the general will take the others? Yeah, I'll take I saw the Honourable Peter and Code of Mind. Just like that, I'll come back to you too.
If you can just, I just said who took the minutes, so if we can just get an answer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Let me start with your question, whether we have discussed parameters and in terms of where we take on the due diligence. Yes, Chair, and there were members on the agenda. But what I also wanted to explain to the Commission is that the National Management Forum, the POC, are collective decision-making structures of the police, but they are all chaired by the National Commissioner, who is the accounting officer. We put matters there that requires all of us to input and arrive at collective decision, because this is the structure that crafts the strategic direction of the organization. And that's about the minutes. They were taken by the secretariat of the DOC, and as well as the NMF, and it's led by, I think they report to General Buma, who's the office manager, but in the meeting, the minutes are led by a secretariat that is led by Gabriel Malastella. So the secretariat, the permanent secretariat of the DOC took the minutes. That's how I'm not sure they want to be women.
Follow up on that issue and on one video also.
I would like to know if these meetings are recorded. If so, may we have the transcripts, please? The actual copies of the recordings.
On one video.
In fact, what I want to say is that Rositor indicated that from the Christians to the sisters of July 2015, there was this meeting that was a spiritual meeting. It means that therefore that you have the minutes right here, because you cannot come without minutes in such a meeting. So I would propose that before we get out of that door, we must have the original minutes of that meeting. We must have the original scheduled meetings of DOC, like you said, before we go out, and we want the original. We can see that there's a lot of manga business going on in the site. So we have not trust in you. I don't know with others. I am. So we need those now.
Right, let's ask James Cole and the rest of the team to respond individually. Then we'll take proposals from the parties for moving forward in terms of this matter. Right? Let's first
hear it. Yeah. Chair, I think the secretariat, they usually keep both manual records and at times also do recording. I'm not sure if the recordings are available, we can do it. We can make it available. But two, on the question of the minutes, I think what I just want to say to the committee, because we are come to the committee each and every time. Number one, we do respect the committee. And number two, we've got no intention to mislead the committee. What we are saying here, we are trying to tell the truth in terms of what we have done. We are not saying that we are beyond 100% correct. Each time we come to the committee evaluates what we present, and the committee will also tell us if this is the direction. But here we're just going to give you a true reflection of what happened. The minutes are available, but when we got the invitation, I think some of us were already on our way here. And even the provincial commissioners, when they came in, some of them is not there to receive the invitation. We can actually, it was the decision of the court that the minutes are available. We can arrange that the minutes be updated or stop the meeting. Then, generally, in writing for myself, I'm not becoming wrong. I think what we are dealing with in the board of POC and the NMF is strategic direction related
of the organization, because we are a family organization. And the marijuana issue or any other incident in the service, if it happens, it tells the strategic direction, then it calls us as top management to come together and discuss that matter in line with strategic direction. But I also want them to equally say, as we deal with the strategic direction, there's also political direction that we are following, which is driven by the Minister of Police. And we always try to align to that is the two directions. And what came out, brought forward to the DOC as media analysis, it called us to deal with the service charter, because this organization has got a service charter, and we are accountable to the public, we are accountable to all the clients. Then, for the purposes of getting the strategic direction right, we said, let's clarify the service charter, which is correct. And if any statement, like the statement about mucus and other things, if it comes out, it usually give trauma to our workforce down on the ground. We also then take equal responsibility to clear them, to say to members, no, the organization is following this direction, and we are accountable and we're reporting, so that members can be encouraged they don't get that is demoralized. And obviously, and finally, whenever such matters are put forth on those agendas, we then take a decision as a strategy and say, this is the direction that it is following. And we also become ready, number one, if there's statements that goes out to the public, whatever, and I also came here to the portfolio commission on several occasions, whenever the chairperson sees something about operations, Viela, or any other thing, when we come here, the chairperson will ask us, can you clarify what we're feeling about Viela? And at times we try to take a proactive action to respond to media before we even come to a portfolio committee and clarify issues that are operational and that are policy. But the other colleagues, they will add, we are not trying to give out the truth to the portfolio committee. We have got no intention to mislead, and we have no intention to disrespect. I think we are not trying to do. Thank you.
My lead general secretary, your career police officer, also was bring good advice to the committee. But you must agree with me. Just like the analogy, say for instance there is a special commissioner in the Brigadier who is supposed to be under investigation with this process involved. Now if all the majors and colonels in that station issue a press statement and say hands off, like the one Lieutenant General Runner, who will give a name, mention his name, hands off Brigadier this and this, what message send that in terms of command control? I mean, that is just not, do you agree, I just want to hear you on that.
Yeah, sure. Let me first say, in terms of protocols and levels, which are standing in the service, a station or tenant station, whether it's cluster, they can't issue a media statement. And then they must escalate it to the level of the province, and the province sub-commissioner will collapse with the national commissioner. And that's when the spokesperson comes in. So, I agree with you. If a station does that,
the principle, Israel, in the command of an organization that is supposed to keep law and order in the country, I mean, it can't be accepted. It can't be. I just want to get that assurance from you. Do you agree with me?
I will not disagree, but the principle, I'm just talking to the principle. I'm talking to the principle because when you come to this level, this is the last level of the organization. And from this level, you get to the municipal authority, which brings in the ministers. So, if we from our side, we started to what we are deciding. If the matter is still within the strategic direction and is within the mandate of the constitutional structures,
we will deal with it. But when we realize it escalates to the political level, we will ask the national commissioner to talk to the minister. And then the ministry will work together with the national commissioner. Thank you.
You see, that should have happened in this case. That's the principle. I think that's the unanimous feeling of the portfolio committee, that the board of commissioners stepped over the line, and that must be addressed. We'll come to proposals later, but it can't be. We are a constitutional state. If you look at the pre-1994 constitution of SAPS, where SAPS was involved in politics, where it was part of the state security council, and during that part of the state gave political control. That was part of the SAPS culture. The post-1994 culture is a police service that is under civilian control. That is the principle. And I think what is concerned to us is the, hopefully we'll get the minutes, but the Magruba's flu incident is, I think, is a blot on SAPS management. It's the first time, I think, since 1994 we have seen that. That should be. We can't live again. I think that's the commitment we want to win from the members. And let's get an opportunity. We'll start with General Kerr and we'll ask all the provincial commissioners.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, I think I need to, to maybe reiterate what General Stolen is indicating. The issue of issuing of statements was intended to actually ensure that we correct the misinformation that is out there, which is talking about the dysfunctionality in SAPS, which is talking about the administration, which is not there, and overall performance of SAPS. It has been running in the media even previously. The intention of the statement was to say to the members, SAPS remains stable, and SAPS remains committed.
No, General, I think we've heard that before this morning from you. We don't agree with that. Let's take the next General.
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members. The meeting at the Hospital of Awasa, it was a regular meeting of the Board of Commissions, which rotates among the provinces. So this time it was in Hope. So at that meeting, yes, there was a general discussion on the day two. I think I got the topic in between because I had to go to Polokwane to authorize the appointment board of directors which were having elections. On my rubber back, finally, the topic being discussed, everybody was in the meeting. However, the issue of the statement is not intended in any way whatsoever to disrespect the process or disrespect the president. The issue of the statement was more intended to alleviate the fears of the crowd, where we seem to see that the membership were asking a lot of questions, whether as to which direction of what was happening. So it was more to support the members to say do the work on the ground. And it does not intend to disrespect processes whatsoever.
Right, thanks. I think it's the same version. Next General.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson, the Minister, and Honourable Members. I want to confirm that was part of the meeting that was held in Mahmoud's group. And I also want to confirm that this subject also came as a response to the advice, accusations or allegations that were made in media in regards to the morale of the members that was becoming very low as a result of all the issues that were being levied against the leadership of the police, including ourselves as provincial commissioners. As provincial commissioners, Honourable Chairperson, the Commission, Honourable Members, we are leading members and other entities who are looking up to us to give clarity on certain issues, to give guidance, and where there's confusion, they also get confused.
this matter was not properly put into the agenda as far as I'm concerned. It is a matter that emerged out of the discussions on other issues, and it emerged because the issue that was being discussed in regards to crime committee also impacted on the issue of the morale of the members. As a result of the statements that were coming from various angles, also within our ranks, alleged from other senior managers, and the professional commissioners wanted to say, we are not part of those senior managers whom we do not know. Thank you for that question.
Right, next one.
Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members. Chairperson, I just want to indicate that yes, the meeting did take place on the 15th and the 16th of July in Limpopo. But in terms of my understanding is that the meeting was not, or the statement that was made by the board was not to intend this to undermine any processes that are supposed to take place. Especially in terms of the board of inquiry that has got to take place, and the provincial commissioner or the board itself should be in a position to accept whatever decision will be made either by the board or the following commission, and should be okay with that.
Chairperson, thank you. I was in attendance at that meeting in Mahabalipur. The discussion has taken place, and I believe that the intention there was to undermine any due process following the Parliament Commission's recommendations. The statement was a broad statement in regard to the discussion that took place that day. Sir.
Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, I want to confirm my attendance of the meeting at Mahawa School on the 15th and the 16th. But I wanted just to reiterate with the rest of the provincial commissioners, same with frankly, all my contributions there, if one would find the minutes within the legal constraints, as well as while trying to understand, we must understand that we were the top management, I think it's reflected on the media, and we have to give advice and directions to the staff in general. And the way from the side, no, never any intentions that would direct to distorting first as well as undermining the processes, legal processes. Thank you.
Which one,
Chairperson, and you have members, Deputy Minister. I want to confirm that I was for our meeting on the 15th and 16th in Limpopo. And we never had any intention in our mind. Nobody. And it is regrettable that it is perceived that way. Our intention was to ensure that as we manage the police, and if I could remember correctly, it was about the actions that police are reluctant to take actions on the ground because of what they're hearing in the media, and that what adverse effect we have in future in the performance of their duties. And I think that is where this we started looking at this. But in my intention, with respect to committee, we account for it and look out. And there was really never an intention if that could be understood in that way.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, and all members. As North West Acting Provincial Commissioner, Chairperson, I want to confirm that I was part of the meeting, the discussion thereof. However, I just want to also emphasize that being part of that, the discussion around the issue of the shady delivery issues that we are confronting in our provinces, the issue also that I raised in that meeting, Chairperson, was the issue that another, because the focus is on Northwest, we are trying our level best as well to make sure that as part itself, who should be having the attitude of saving, we should serve at all times. Hence, at any instance of any decision that we want to take a person to make sure that the Northwest people are safe and feel safe, I'm also accountable to the executive in the province. Mm-hmm. So I just want to say it is unfortunate that Chairperson, that indeed
that went out as if we are not respecting this government. This government chairperson has done a lot for us. We are where we are today because of this government. And I just want to say, we are going to respect the government. We are going to respect all the positions. And indeed, chairperson, I appreciate on behalf of the office, I'm sure I could also do the same, that your intervention, your calling us here, indeed is important. We really appreciate that so that we can at least explain ourselves. I really appreciate the opportunity, chairperson, that we could do that. But really, chairperson, it was your intention to undermine the government, in particular our president. Thank you very much, chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, and all the Honorable Members. I want to confirm that as the Acting Provincial Commissioner of KwaZulu-Natal, I support all the constitutional structures that includes this committee, the Portfolio Committee, the Ministry, ultimately the President and the community of this country. And that at the time when that meeting in question was held, I wasn't an acting provincial commissioner, I only acted from the 3rd of August this year. But I do want to state very clearly that I support all the two processes of this country. Thank you.
At the back, how day?
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. Honourable Chairperson, I want to emphasize that the statements that were issued were reactive, were not proactive statements. When there was media reports about mutiny, breaking of ranks, we issued a statement to say that we are fully behind the National Commissioner. Work is going on. And there were officers that were quoted, generals, lieutenant generals, that were part of meetings that we still don't know today who they are. So we were setting the record straight to say that work is going on. And I want to confirm what General Stone said. The National Commissioner said, I'm conflicted. That is why after the meeting, we had to engage with General Mahale and the Board of Commissioners to say what the statement should say. And I was part of this meeting, and I subscribed to this media statement, which were setting the record straight in terms of what the negative media reports were saying. And if there is any understanding that the statement was having any other purpose than responding to the media, we regret that, Honorable Chairperson.
Well, General, to say that the aim of the second was to say that it was tried is the understatement of the morning. But the next, okay, is that everybody? Yeah. Honourable members, what we will do now, we will take tea for 10 minutes and then we will come back in terms of the rally for this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I saw that you were just like this. and sold. And then he had this
ownership. Yeah. Who did the best thing?
And I said, I have to go up and try.
Why are you asking me?
Right, honourable members, 2 minutes. Thank you very much. Right, thank you very much, honourable members, delegations. Maybe just in terms of the rest of the morning program, it seems we're going to run out of time for some of our items. But what we will do, depending on how progress we're making in the next 15 minutes, we will then take civil society's presentations, and then as well SAPS and IPED. But I think in terms of DPCI policy guidelines, we may be less take them to Tuesday next week. So we will maybe do that with the Secretariat. So the Secretariat must be quite concise. It seems that we already received the presentation from the Secretariat. Thank you very much. So I think we'll just bump DPCI to Tuesday. But let's see how our things are better. Yes, honourable members, we have had input from SAPS, we had various input from FLO, but we need to make progress and move forward. And depending on discussions we're going to have now and the response, it will determine to a large extent the rest of the morning and way forward. So I'll ask members, I saw Honourable Kulabatsi, Honourable Kola Barnard, Honourable Grunewald, Ben, and as well as Mabija and Mahuda. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. At the ANC, we don't have a say in whether the National Commissioner stays or goes because the matter is with the President. But what we are going to demand now is a withdrawal of the uncalled for statement by SAPS. And again, we are going to demand an apology to the President, who is still applying his mind to the Alan Commission findings. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. These provincial heads, I believe, have been led by the presence of their superior rank, their boss, National Police Commissioner. In the rank structure of the SAPS, one takes orders, and no matter what the orders are, you obey. I am sensing there are certain provincial commissioners who did not wish to sign the documents. Now, these provincial commissioners, except the one from KZN, who is yet to answer to us for her utterances, have done as ordered by the National Police Commissioner. There's no question in my mind. She was at the meeting, and that was huge efforts were made to hide that fact from this committee here in Parliament, but she was there, and she oversaw the entire process. We have two options as a committee. Of course, we could call for the power that be to suspend the heads of the clout of their oath. They ventured into political realms, they swore not to, and of course, the media officer with the non-existent rank, who claims he put a statement out without his boss signing it off,
even though obviously she agreed to it being sent out as she was in the meeting, or we can call for the suspension of the accounting officer herself. She is the source of this entire issue, as Jackie Selebe, as Becky Keller were before that. They did exactly the same thing. It's a repeat of history here. And the provincial commissioners were not held responsible. They were not. They were obeying orders. The National Police Commissioner was held responsible. The current National Police Commissioner has used this method to prop up her position. She used it previously. She's used it again. There's no guarantee she will not continue to use this method. And all others at her 72 billion rand disposal, she'll continue to do so. So the Democratic Alliance calls for suspension of the National Police Commissioner, pending an outcome of a full investigation into this unsavory matter, and a determination by the President as a result of the findings of the Marikana Commission, various disciplinary hearings, and all the myriad issues as highlighted in our report last week. There was one provincial commissioner already referred to the Commission of Inquiry. I don't think it has been declared yet by the President, but I think everyone in this room accepts that he's coming. So I believe the National Police Commission has used the provincial commissioners as a trade union in her efforts to justify keeping her position. She must be removed from the position of influence, so this sort of behavior cannot be repeated before a determination for a fitness for office is declared. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Hill. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on behalf of the Freedom Front Plus, I want to start by saying that, firstly, we support the proposal made by the ANC for a new statement. Secondly, Chairperson, I also want to say that I believe that the Provincial Commissioner's intention was not to undermine. And I say I believe it because I do think that the Provincial Commissioners were put in a position where they were actually conflicted. You know, it's sometimes like democracy. When three lions and a springbok sits around the table and they have to vote who they're going to eat, I think they know what the result is going to be. Because they are appointed by the National Commissioner. I also want to add, Chairperson, that the report of this committee is sent to the President on this issue, which can be handled in a process if he acts further to appoint a commission that we also have what is happened today be known to the people to do further investigation. And especially, we will have to then look at the minutes and, if it's necessary, even to the recordings of this meeting, especially when it comes to what General Mokgala has said. For me, it was an intentional effort to mislead this committee, and further steps should be taken from that. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable from Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. When I was listening to all the provincial heads, it seemed as if they were doing it for the poem, because all of them, they were saying one thing. What we are asking here, there is that lady from the National, who was saying hands off to the National Commissioner. Whom they are referring to? And where is that lady? I think Chairperson, when you call the National, the Provincial Commissioner of NFT, we must call that lady. I don't know her name, but they know her. She was saying hands off to the National Commissioner. Whom she was referring to? I want to ask them to go back to the media and apologize to the public. And they must apologize to us, because when they are talking here, they were saying they are not having the intention of doing this and that. Whereas they didn't go to the minister first, to the minister and ask him, what are we going to do if things are like this? They just went to the media because they are now reporting to the media, not to the other. They were you undermine the president of the country. I don't know what informs you to do that. Please withdraw your statements, and each of you, provincial commissioners, I don't know what must I say to you. I don't know, because you are leading,
people are saying the people of South Africa must feel safe. How are they going to feel safe from you? Whereas you are not prioritizing your work, you are prioritizing individuals. What you are saying here, I just thought you were talking. You were having a meeting yesterday. There was someone who was interrupting you saying that you must go and say you were not informed or you were not. You don't apologize. Please apologize. You are accounting to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Vitor. Sorry,
it's just a top up. All the provincial commissioners were reflecting a point, and it makes me believe that this was a quint up response so that all of you follow the theme. And why I say so, it's because the provincial, Limpopo provincial commissioner said that during the discussion of the statement, the issue of the statement, he was not there, he had gone somewhere in Polokwane to do 1, 2, 3. But he's also following suit without understanding how the deliberation took place. So it means he's just taking the marching order that you, we must talk like this. So it means there's no truth. Things are being cooked, and please don't cook the minutes and the scheduled meetings. We want them as original as they are. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Hashim. I think we have been listening to their presentations. Also, I think we will have to convert this perhaps conflicted situation into positive. Let us look at the positive side of it. To say, a chaplain, it takes a wise man or a woman, a matured for that matter, to accept if you've done mistakes during your call of duty. One other thing, Chairperson, is that I would want to advise supporting what the ANC has proposed. The FF Plus supported the withdrawal of the statement, which is very genuine. To say, Chairperson, such personas are professional people. They are not elected people, and therefore they cannot persuade political agendas. They must move away from politics. There are those people who have dedicated themselves through their political parties to represent people politically. They are officials. They've got their responsibilities to carry out. From the presentation by General Stolle, who admitted to say he understands the procedures and principles on how to report and all those things, but failing to accept to say on this day there were some issues which cropped in, and out of the emotions, because they wanted to respond to the meeting, and which was, for me, it was a mistake, because two things happen which are not correct. How do you have two mistakes becoming the right?
because you can't just ignore your protocol just because there is a statement which you want to respond to, ignoring your own way of doing things. I think it is proper that they withdraw themselves also from politics, and also, of course, apologize unconditionally to the President of the Republic of South Africa. Because humiliating that office by the people who are supposed to protect the citizenry, I think it is just uncalled for. Lastly, Chairperson, is that you know, sometimes we market ourselves very negative to a point that if people attack us, we forget that it is us who created those loopholes. Because, I mean, you can't defend, you can't have that solidarity support to issues that you, that will implicate you as well. To an extent that you don't even care about your mandate. You care about the person who is leading you, even if that person is misleading you. So you will have to support almost everything. So Chairperson, I just wanted to indicate that this issue was discussed in that particular meeting where we were not there, out of emotions. Because I imagine if that media was there, I think that media would have been a runaway. They would have changed that media if that media was there. The manner in which this issue was brought to the decision, because it was not part of the agenda. So we can't discuss emotional things in an official meeting to a point where you even release the statement, which does not inform by anything except the emotions. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. First, Honourable Bailey, and then I'll come back. Sorry, Chair, I did change my mind. Most of the substantive points have been covered. I think the only new inputs I want to make, just short and sweet, is going forward to recommend to staff that a very useful principle would be to defend the institution, not individuals, defend your performance, not people. And then we can avoid this mess ever coming up again.
I believe the commissioners, they are not a union. Therefore, I would like to indicate that there's a need for them to go back and apologize to POPCRO, because they have stepped into the territory of the POPCRO because they have gone political.
On the Dr. Walt?
Chairperson, I hear what my honourable colleague is proposing. I don't think I will go along with that one, because they will actually further politicize the issue. I don't think that's the root issue. Thank you.
Right. The honourable deputy minister, anything from your side in this sense?
Happens in the police. I've spoken to for the management that maybe we should improve on the communication. Because it really is true that if this statement was taken to us before it was released, we would have corrected some of those things. And also looking at the timing when this statement was released is also problematic. Hence, I agree with you when you say that we must apologize to the president, we must apologize to the nation, because we started by preempting the president. And it comes not knowing what the president will say. Let's say, for instance, if there is a commission that is going to be appointed by the president, each and every person will be given an opportunity to go and meet and make her or his presentation. I'm sure that would have waited for that time, but I really would like the portfolio committee to forgive us for the wrong that we did. I understand that this was not the intention. Hence, I said to them, their statement should have been very short. After reading the newspaper and hearing all the allegations, they should have said that we are not part of that, of the people who don't support the National Commission and of the end there. Because the problem is when they mention other things that are unusual, which make now the statement to look the way it looked for that media briefing. So I think that all that I would say on behalf of myself and the Minister of Culture. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Yeah, thank you, Honourable Members of the Committee, for your input as well as the input from SAPS. Now, I think the first issue that we also raised this morning is the constitutional point. And it's a pity that we didn't come through from the response we received from SAPS. I think that also highlights the need that the recommendations of the National Planning Commission must be implemented as soon as possible in terms of the renewal of the SAPS. That is critical. And also the issue of leadership, the appointment process, that's critical. Because going through the process of the White Paper, the new SAPS Act, we will need the leadership that understands the distinction between civilian and executive authority. What is exactly the role of the police members to play? And I want to quote from a document that was submitted on the 15th of June 1995 at the Constitutional Assembly, where that was the input from the NEC, which said that the final responsibility for security should be taken out of the hands of the security apparatus. Final responsibility for security should be placed squarely in the jurisdiction of the democratically elected parliament and executive. The security services are to be held explicitly. Civilian control over the security services at ministerial level and through other mechanisms should be constitutionally enshrined. The right of the public to access information must be provided for constitutionally with limitations in the interest of national security. Security institutions should not act on their own authority, but under the guidance of parliament and executive. Now that was the submission that informed the proposal in terms of the final constitution. And I think that is the principle still at play. There must be civilian control. There should be a blurring of roles. And we heard now the version in terms of the statement that was produced or compiled on the 15th or 16th of July. But that statement was only issued 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later. So if there was an urgency with regard to the matter, why wasn't it issued after that meeting? It was waited just the night before the submissions was made to the presidency regarding the medical report. So that is very, very problematic and unfortunate. I think also we will, before we come to the recommendations, I think it's important next Tuesday that the Provincial Commission of KZN appears before the committee. We also need the Regional Commissioner for HRE, General Nsia, to come to this committee to explain the statement that was published. And the principle of submitting all the statements countrywide. Because I can tell you the reaction I had from members and my office as well, from other police, senior officials, countrywide, in all the provinces, and at Wagas, what are they saying about us? And I'm not going to make that known or publish that all. But there's different views, and we must ensure that there's one SAPS that fits with one voice. And the SAPS is bigger than people. People come and go. You will have divisional commissioners, provincial commissioners, national commissioners, they will come and go. But the founding principle is the Constitution, the SAPS Act. and the focus must be on core business. The problem is, if there's a fight in the bureaucracy, usually they will take side with incumbents. Some won't. Some will wait. Some will wait for new process or the new incumbent. The problem is, you become then engulfed in internal battle, and you don't focus on your core business, and that's the fighting of crime. That is fighting of crime. I mean, last week we had a presentation by the Institute of Security Studies on the robberies are up. We have seen the tragic killing of police officers, 7 in this last week and a half. Tragic, that is the core issue that we must address. We must, and there's been successes, but I think that is the energy should go into that. Why do we leave processes that is in the hands of the executive? The president has instituted or appointed the Foreign Commission. The president. And the due process must be followed. And the mere fact that that statement was only released 2 weeks after the Mahuba School meeting is an indication that it's not me, it's not only just to clarify. Because if you want to clarify members, why didn't you release it that evening? You waited 2 weeks. So in terms of your own version, if you wanted to clarify members and so on, you waited 2 weeks. So that's also bad management. The principle is, if a DG is attacked in government, it's up to the spokesperson to respond, and that's that. That's that. You don't see other government departments where there's crisis regarding the DG, where the DG is suspended, that you have now the DDG and chief directors issue the statements in support. Should that have provincial directors of government departments say hands off the DG? Really, that is what you expect at university campuses or at high school, but really not in a professional organization. So I think if we want to achieve the goals of the white paper and the NDP, a professional police force that will be trusted by the community, we must go back to basics. We must go back to basics, do our job, leave the politics for the politicians, leave that process unaffected. Otherwise, we're going to have serious ruptures. And you got your view, but you know, the communication I received this last week and a half by telephone, fax, and email in person from your colleagues, and that's why we want to have a situation where that doesn't occur. You must respect the process announced by the president. We don't want to have any comments on it. So going forward, there was various proposals made. I heard on the code of Barnard, but I think we must wait the process announced by the president. So for the portfolio committee at this stage to ask for suspension, I think would also be procedurally not correct. We must give the presidency an opportunity to look at the representations of the National Commission, also the chief legal advice, and of course the president will then make up his mind and announce his decision to the nation, and we must respect that process. But I think that is critical at this stage, today, and I think that is the ANC's recommendation that the EFF and the DIA also can look at, is three things. We want now here for all members to retract that statement. They must apologize to the portfolio committee, and they must also apologize to the presidency, to the president, and we must also have an undertaking that we will never have a repeat of such process. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. General Sitori, I'll start with you, and you can go through the debate.
Point of interruption.
Yeah, let's get it on record, please. Yeah. Just so you must put the DI across the board.
Okay, thanks for the opportunity to allow me to join the honorable members for a moment. I wanted to say about all our deliberations, we got a minister in our presence, and she has summarized everything that we're talking to.
we have taken note of the direction that the portfolio committee has given us. And we respect that direction, but I won't say anything more beyond what the minister has summarized. Thank you.
Chairperson and Honourable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, the Honourable Minister, we regret, Honourable Chairperson, that the statement did what we never intended to do, and it will never happen again.
Right. Others? I'm very glad that the two generals associate them with the statement of the portfolio committee.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members, on behalf of myself, I do withdraw the statement unconditionally. It turned out to have unintended consequences, and it shall not be repeated in one leg from what I said. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General, for that.
Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members, I would also like to send in tune like the Deputy Minister of Commission, as told, without reiterating what the Deputy Minister has already indicated. I align myself with the statement by the Deputy Minister, and on behalf of the province that I come from, and I would also like to apologize to the committee.
The Honourable Chairperson, I hereby indicate that I am withdrawn from the board statement, and I want obviously apology to this committee and to the state president. It will never happen.
Thank you, General. I think what is also important that SAPS must issue today a statement including all these issues that you raised. Thank you.
I apologize to the committee, I apologize to the president of the country, and I commit that it won't happen again. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, I, on behalf of Mpumalanga SAPS, I do hereby apologize for the statement from the BOC and all statements I issued to the police. I am apologizing yeah, for what happened to the committee, to the president, and to the general community of South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General.
Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members, I align myself with the statement of the Minister and hereby unconditionally apologize to the State President and the country as a whole.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Honourable Members. On behalf of the Northwest, unconditionally in aligning myself with what the Minister, our Deputy Minister said, I want to say really we are regretting the message that people received out there. It was not intended to. And thank you very much, Chairperson, for this committee for guiding us
and also reminding us as to what is our mandate in terms of what is it that we need to do. We really appreciate that as an offer. To the President, the country as a whole, we really appreciate that.
Thank you, Jill.
Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, and honorable members, on behalf of KZN Province, I wish to apologize to the President and to the country, and I wish to undertake to ensure that such confusion and information that is likely to result in unintended consequences doesn't happen again. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, on behalf of, I want to subscribe to the statement issued by the Deputy Minister and also want to apologise to the Honourable President and to the committee.
Responding to the issues that were in the public domain, the statement, it is clear from the discussion this morning that it resulted in a huge misunderstanding and to the conclusion that the BOC had intended to undermine the processes and get involved in political issues. From that perspective, it is regrettable that such a statement was then issued. Thank you.
Just a moment.
I think I perceive him in a way that he slightly apologized. The first information you gave that you were doing what to the what was it's unacceptable when you are apologizing. Just don't try to do the right thing. Repeat yourself correctly. So, delete the first part of your thing, please.
Honorable Kabar, shut up. I don't want to open a debate, but get off your head.
Deputy Minister and honourable members, I indeed heard, and the first part of my statement is deleted then.
Right, that is fine. Thank you very much for that. It's then the end of the story for us in terms of this matter. We will just deal with the other two generals on our Tuesday, but we appreciate the approach. We need a police service that is described in the Constitution, that is subject to civilian control, and don't undermine any processes initiated by the President. That's critical, but I mean, fighting crime is your core business, and I think that is the issue we want to hear. Next week, we've got to go get a briefing from you on two projects you are running, and that's what we want to hear, Fiera, as well as combat. So that is focus. So let us respect other processes. So thank you, Deputy Minister, for coming. We appreciate it very much. Colleagues, what we're going to do now, because we've got very limited time, we're going to ask the civil society organizations to deal with the DVA report. We will see when we come. But I think the Secretariat and even the Provincial Commissioners, we maybe have to reschedule that. But let's see how far we come. In terms of BPCI, we will also have to decide that we maybe do next Tuesday, but that's how things are. Unfortunately, but let's get civil society to come forward and then we will start the DVI presentation. Thank you. thank you very much, honourable members. We will then start with the Legal Resources Centre. We just maybe ask the participants to introduce themselves, and then we will start.
Good.
Just want to know, is the presentation available on screen?
I have submitted one.
Right, let's go ahead. Let's go ahead with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the chairperson, the honourable members of the portfolio committee, for allowing us the opportunity. My name is Charlene May. I'm an attorney. I work for an organisation called the Legal Resources Centre, National Public Interest Law Clinic, and we're based in Cape Town, Gauteng, Durban, and in Grahamstown. I don't want to take up too much time because I think that we're running a bit late, so I wanted to focus on some of the key issues in respect of the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. I want to start off just by explaining where the Legal Resources Centre fits in respect of the implementation of the Act and the work that we do. We see primarily women, although we see some men, coming into our office reporting being victims or survivors of domestic violence. We assist in court representation, in other words, we represent victims of domestic violence in our domestic violence courts in attempts to try and obtain protection orders in terms of the DVA Act. We also do research and we occasionally come before the various portfolio committees when they deal with the implementation of the Act or when there are issues around law reform. So these are some of the areas in which we engage. Today, my presentation is largely going to be focused on two of the areas of engagement or methodologies that we've used in respect of domestic violence. I'm going to talk to you about what victims or survivors of domestic violence have told us their experiences are in the implementation of the Act. And then I'm also going to touch on what SACS members themselves have said to us in respect of training exercises that we've undertaken over the past 2 years with SACS members. I want to highlight that we have not done training on the Act itself, but that we have done training on issues around gender sensitivity and issues around cultural awareness as part of various facets of the implementation of the Act. So very quickly, one of the main issues, of course, which is responsible for the implementation of the Act relates to the National Commission and the issuing of national instructions in terms of the Act. Previously, and I think that the Honourable Chair had made reference to the ICD, and that the ICD had reporting requirements in respect of the Act up until about March 2012. Currently, that reporting requirement rests with the Civilian Secretariat for Police, and that they are to come before Parliament and report on the number and the particulars of matters that are reported to them in respect of non-compliance with the Act, as well as to make recommendations. So, just touching on some of the responsibilities so that it doesn't feel as if I'm talking in the air. Some of the responsibilities that SAS has in terms of the national instructions include that without delay, SAS members shall ensure that a police vehicle is dispatched to attend to a complainant, that members must inform complainants on their rights and remedies, they must hand complainants a notice and explain its content. Where a complainant wants to lay criminal charges, they must be assisted to do so. Members must assist the complainant to obtain treatment and suitable shelter, and members may accompany the complainant to collect personal belongings from her home. Once an interim order has been obtained, members must serve the interim order on the respondent without delay, as it is only valid to the respondent once it has been served. So that is not a closed list of the national instructions, but it's just to touch on some of the key areas or obligations that members have. I want to move on to issues of non-compliance with those national instructions and some of the issues of misconduct that the clients themselves have reported to us, but have also been shared with this committee, I think, over the past 15 years, around non-compliance. So there's been failure to arrest the abuse of an offence where an offence of violence has been committed, failure to arrest in cases where a warrant to arrest has been issued, failure to dispatch a vehicle to a domestic violence incident, failure to inform victims of counselling, medical or shelter services, failure to keep a record of protection orders on file, Failure to note incidents of domestic violence in the domestic violence register. Failure to take witness statements. Failure to open a docket and refer matters for prosecution. Failure to provide J88 medical forms to victims in cases of physical injury. Failure to act in cases where there is no interim protection order and incorrect advice that is given to complainants. I want to touch on some of the findings that we've had in respect of the training that we've conducted over the past 2 years. So participation in training over the past 2 years has primarily taken place during Women's Month, and it has allowed us, the Legal Resource Center, a unique engagement opportunity with SACS members who are required to implement the Act. And so some of the things that I'm going to say to you now are some of the things that SACS members themselves have shared with us. That there is no clear lines of communication between the police on one hand and the other relevant government departments that are tasked to implement the Act. Clerks at the court don't know what the roles of SACS is under the Act, and SACS members have no engagement with the Department of Social Development, so they do not know where to refer clients to in cases of counselling or cases where shelter is needed. Survivors of domestic violence were stereotyped based on members' own personal perceptions and prejudice. Some members did not have a basic understanding of when domestic violence constituted a crime. And some of the indications of that was that a member had raised the issue of, so it was only once there was a protection order in place that a member could actually act, or was required to act. Members did not receive training on appreciating the cycle of gender-based violence or the psyche of a victim of domestic violence. So they expressed much frustration and reluctance to assist, as women do not see cases through. They conceded that this frustrated them on a personal level. One of the anecdotes from that particular session was a SAC member who said he felt that SAC should have the power to continue with cases even when complainants felt that they wanted to withdraw proceedings because they had just become so frustrated in trying to do their job. With identified prejudice against asylum seekers and refugees and general notion that they are illegal. They conceded that it was difficult for them when they were assisting victims of domestic violence where it was cases of asylum seekers or refugees where people didn't have valid documentation. Specifically, then such members felt that the first obligation was to arrest the person for having been in the country unlawfully or illegally and then not be able to deal with the issue of the domestic violence. Members didn't feel that it was their duty to serve documents for court purposes, and I must say that this was one of the most controversial issues that was discussed over the last 2 years of training, and it kept on popping up, that members felt that the duty to serve documents should rest on, would be a Department of Justice function, and something that the sheriffs would have to do. Of course, it is a function that the sheriff does, but then individual clients have to be able to pay the sheriff's fees. So that becomes difficult when complainants don't have the funds available to do so. But of course, this might have been an indication of why process and service of interim protection orders in fact don't happen on a timeliest basis or that they don't happen at all. Members raised the issue that domestic violence officers within stations were normally either female or of a lower rank. This impacted on their ability to hold senior members accountable in cases of misconduct. Access to vehicles was sometimes a problem in areas that have high rates of serious and violent crimes, and domestic violence is moved down on the priority list. If I move on to some of the client experiences over the past probably about 5 years that we've been running the project. Just to say again that we provide legal representation in cases the women have experienced difficulty obtaining protection orders. And these are some of the experiences that women have shared with us in respect of their engagements with SACS. Clients are advised that until they obtain a protection order, the police can accept charges against perpetrators. Even where protection order is in place, members will attend the scene, mediate the resolution, and very often leave or they often subject the complainant to secondary victimization. There's a delay in serving interim protection orders on the respondent, which puts the complainant in a vulnerable position. This, especially for us as lawyers, is a great frustration, go to court in the morning. The interim protection order is issued. Our client is expected to go back into that household where she has obtained a protection order against her abuser. She's too afraid to tell him that she has obtained the protection order, and she sits there anxiously for the entire day waiting. Sometimes she waits 2 to 3 days before the interim order is served on her. Interim protection orders are served in the middle of the night, which disrupts households and once again leaves the complainant open to further abuse once the police have left. We want to touch on some of the recommendations. One of our key recommendations is a review on whether or not national instruction should be improved upon. Since the inception, there's been implementation challenges. And perhaps we need to review and see where the instructions themselves need to be improved upon. Do we need to add additional things for staff members to do? Do we need to take away some of them? Or do we need to actually change the wording of the document so that it now conforms to what I just want to say modern technology can provide for us? Improved training and understanding and how to engage with victims of domestic violence. Language and cultural barriers exist, and training addressing cultural barriers should address this as well as resource allocation. The need to rebuild the trust relationship with women in communities so that they feel that sex members will in fact protect them. There's a need to develop flowcharts within jurisdictions so that the line of communication, roles and responsibilities of role players are clear to everyone, not just staff members. A clear example of the need to develop those flowcharts probably relate to women coming in and there's a need of psychosocial support or shelter so that staff can understand what the role of the Department of Social Development is, but that members of the public also understand who the role players within their communities are and where they can go to for assistance. We need to ensure that there are safe spaces at all police stations so that women have safe environments and that areas are staffed with qualified counsellors. Very often the counsellors that are available are volunteers from the community, and therefore they are not necessarily always available on a 24/7 basis. More domestic violence officers need to be appointed so that when someone is off duty or on leave, the domestic violence matters can be dealt with adequately. You know, some time ago, probably a year ago, when we tried to do a survey of domestic violence implementation at police stations in the Western Cape, the majority answer that we got during November, December was that the domestic violence officer was unavailable because they were either out for training or the domestic violence officer was on leave, and in some cases it was highlighted that the domestic violence officer is also the person arranging the Christmas party. Senior members are appointed to be domestic violence officers so that can be dealt with as a serious crime and hold members accountable. That better support should be provided from station commanders in respect of domestic violence matters. I want to end there because I think that the Women's Legal Center is also coming to do a presentation. I want to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity of having invited us to come and speak. I want to, as a last note, say that it's welcomed that the Portfolio Committee is willing to engage and that SAS is willing to engage with civil society around issues of domestic violence or issues of gender-based violence. It's not something that we can do alone as individuals. And it's reassuring to civil society that the Portfolio Committee is taking its role and responsibility seriously in respect of accountability. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your presentation. The next presenters, you are welcome.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. While it's still morning, we've got 4 more minutes. Okay. My name is Sonia Boardman. I'm an attorney at the Women's Legal Centre and I specialise in gender-based violence at the centre. The Women's Legal Centre functions in much the same way as the Legal Resources Centre, the only difference being that the Women's Legal Centre serves exclusively female members of the public and female clients. Our main game is constitutional and impact litigation. And in the context of domestic violence as well as sexual violence and gender-based violence in general, our main concern at the moment is the systemic laws that we pick up
to the free legal advice office that we have. We have centralized offices in Johannesburg and in Khayelitsha, as well as our Cape Town office in Alex Street, and through the service points, we're approached by members of the public that indicate to us much the same problems that Ms. May has just outlined as being the experience of the LRC attorney dealing with domestic violence. So we won't repeat what Ms. May has just presented to you. Instead, I would like to address you on some of the concerns that we raised in the letter that we addressed to you on the 11th of June this year. That letter was jointly addressed to yourself by the Women's Legal Centre and Ms. Lisa Benton, who is sitting next to me, and I'm very pleased to be sharing the space with her today. So really, the letter spoke about the Civilian Secretariat of Police's implementation report, which was before you in May. And the letter was prompted by some of the concerns that you yourself identified in that particular report. We picked up on the issue of legal and policy reference to the Civilian Secretariat of Police, and Ms. Benton will elaborate on that a little bit in a moment, as well as the statutory reporting obligations of the National Police Commissioner, and then the information contained in the report itself, the detailed sort of station-level information we'd like to speak about briefly. And then we'd also like to alert you to some important related legal and policy developments that are ongoing at the moment, where we believe domestic violence should be a crucial consideration that should be kept in mind as these policies and laws come before you. Some individual concerns, in addition to what Ms. May has outlined already, we are concerned to be seeing ongoing civil litigation against the South African Police Service related to server delivery, and I shan't go into the details of these particular matters, but suffice to say there is civil action being taken against the police on an ongoing basis, and matters you know, that gave rise to this civil litigation, the causes of action, are very much related to what Ms. May has outlined, and we are concerned that these things don't seem to be shifting. We speak about them year in, year out, and the problems seem to be persistent, and so we're starting to investigate what the underlying causes might be, what are the systemic causes of this sort of stubborn tendency of some of these problems in service delivery to persist. Another issue that we would like to address with you today is the 147 cases outlined in the CSP's report of domestic violence perpetrated by SAS officers themselves, reported at 74 different stations. And so in respect of the report, what we are concerned about is transparency and accountability in respect of the disciplinary processes that are taken, the disciplinary process that are followed when these kinds of cases come up. The shooting by Constable Ron Marcy of four people at the Alexandra Police Station, we believe, especially underscores the need also to pay particular attention to the use and control of firearms, both by the general public and by SAT officers, by SAT members. And we think that there are some upcoming legislative and policy processes that can be very useful in addressing these kinds of incidents and preventing them from happening in the future. I'm now going to hand over to Ms. Benton to discuss some of these underlying persistent problems.
Thank you. Anything? So what I'm going to be doing is drawing...
Yeah. Do we have the document?
I think this one wasn't submitted, but we will arrange that if we distribute it. Thank you, Ms. Benton. You can go. Thank you.
Thank you. What I really want to focus on is some of the themes that are emerging from about 12 years worth of research now looking at the Domestic Violence Act, because I think we know what the problems are. We repeat them. I see we have some here in the ICD who will say that these are the same problems they've been reporting on as well. So you want to look really, I think, at where there might be problems in law and policy where potentially the committee could intervene. So I think we've gone through the obligations already. I think the first issue that we want to raise is that the police's submission to Parliament of their 6 month report is extremely erratic. We see nothing until 2006. We see something submitted in 2007. We see nothing again until about 2011. Then we see nothing again since 2013. And although the Civilian Secretariat and before the ICD was very consistent, that reporting is not happening consistently. So I think that is something the committee needs to attend to. And what we would also want to suggest in that regard, having looked at some of the reports that the police have submitted over the years, is that it might be worth the committee setting up a template as to what should be in those reports on a routine basis, which can then be assessed what progress is happening against the previous 6 month report. I think one of the areas where we are identifying some problems has been in the shift between from the ICD and their oversight of the Domestic Violence Act to the Civilian Secretariat for Police. I think one of the issues at the time we looked at this in June, I don't think this has corrected it since, was that the National Action still made reference to the ICD. They needed to reflect the change to the Civilian Secretariat of Police. And what was happening was that at provincial level, when the Civilian Secretariat of Police was asking some provinces for cooperation around oversight, they were not getting that on the basis that the legislation said ICD and they were CSP, so they were not going to assist them. So I think that needs to be altered as a matter of priority. We understood that the CSP had attempted to do this more than a year ago, and at the time there was a reference group meeting. The police had not apparently signed off on that documentation. They have done so now. I think the other real concern is that the shift from ICE to CSP means that an independent avenue of complaint has been lost to members of the public. Previously, if people were unhappy with how they'd be treated by the police, they could either go to the station or they could go to the provincial office of the ICD. That they can't do any longer. They must now only go back to the station commissioner where whatever happened. And I think in many instances, people are not going to want to go back and complain to the same people who treated them badly in the first place. So I think there needs to be some attention paid to where now do people go if they want an independent investigation. It's very difficult for them to go to the national office of the CSP, and it would appear that all the provinces are able to take up complaints either or have the capacity. And you can just see the effect this has had on complaints. If you look in the last year of the ICD functioning, there were 94 reports made to them by members of the public. If you look at the first year of the CSP's reporting, and these were reports the CSP themselves identified, they weren't sent to them, they identified 22. So it's 77% of the time. So you can see the very real impact of removing that independent complaint mechanism. It's often very hard for us to track when people are making complaints against police, because the police are quite clearly not forwarding those complaints to the CSP. Just more recent data, that 1 6-month period, there were roughly 50 complaints by the National Office on the Domestic Violence Act. The only reason the CSP was able to identify those was by actually going to disciplinary registers at police stations, because these had been necessarily submitted to them by the stations. I also want to make a comment that on average, only 3 provinces are actually forwarding complaints to the CSP. The majority are not. And again, I think that's interesting because of the silences in the legislation. I think just to compare, the SAF 15-month period reports that they had 280 domestic violence-related complaints. If you compare that, the CSP 6 months collected roughly 50. So quite clearly, there's a very significant number of complaints that are not being brought to the CSP's attention, which means they cannot track them, they cannot see what improvements need to be made, and they cannot identify where weaknesses are. I think the other challenge, if we look at monitoring, is that in many ways, what is becoming is a way of taking an inventory or a catalogue of police inadequacy. And that's not really sufficient. I think the important thing is to look at what are consequences. What we would really like to see is that we shift from a position at this point in time, provincial commissioners are measured on their capacity to reduce particular categories of crime. The reports are that actually they start to measure on their quality of the adherence to the Domestic Violence Act. And where the stations are not adhering, that should be a mark, no, it should be no performance base. But there should be some kind of way of holding the stations responsible. You know, we're recommending possibly a position of within every 90 days of a report of a station receiving a report, they must report as to what they have done in order to take the necessary steps to have altered and corrected the situation identified at the station. So I think that whole question of consequences for not complying is not clear. And I think it does turn the Domestic Violence Act into an exercise in making complaints, not being able to do anything. I think the other question that Daniel fears in the next slide is that the Civilian Secretariat in the National Office, which doesn't have clear lines of instruction and authority over the provincial offices of safety and security. And so what you can see is very significant discrepancies in what is being monitored in each province. And I think it raises questions over the extent which possibly use the Police Portfolio Committee need to involve the National Council of Provinces who do exercise authority over those provincial offices. Just to give you an example of Limpopo with 96 stations, in that year, in that period of the year, they managed to monitor exactly 7 of the 96. So 7% of the stations' provinces. Best performer is Lady Gauteng, which has managed to monitor close to 80% of the province's stations. But there's very significant discrepancies in the other provinces, which means that I think that very uneven qualities of monitoring is going on. Can we go back to the previous one? So I think that's a clear question that needs to be looked at. Whether or not this is true, one doesn't know, but then asking the provinces why they aren't monitoring, they're saying that's an unfounded mandate and that they don't have the funds to go out and do monitoring. Whether or not that's correct, I don't know, but that's something the committee should look at. And I think then just the last point, that adherence to the prescript of domestic violence actually needs to become part of youth performance, both at station level and at provincial level, and the necessary consequences should flow from an administrative point of view when there isn't that adherence. Let me just like to briefly draw your attention to some parallel legislative and policy developments that are currently ongoing, and some of them are before you at this point in time, and believe that these processes have a bearing on domestic violence and how it is policed. And therefore, it's very important that domestic violence be considered in the process of looking at these laws and policies that are before you in process of refining them and getting them ready for finalization and promulgation. First of all, there is the Civilian Secretariat of Police's brand new policy on reducing the barriers to reporting gender-based violence. We believe that this policy could be a game changer. It's quite unique in the sense that it tries to move away from reporting on sort of the quantity of things, for example, the number of training initiatives or the number of arrests made or the number of reports received, and moves more towards that capturing of what quality of those things are, the quality of policing. And I think that that's important also then to highlight success stories and good practices, because I think currently those are being lost in the manner in which reporting is being done. And there are police officers who do an excellent job, of course, in addition to the problematic aspects. There is, of course, also the White Paper on Police and the White Paper on Safety and Security. These papers are before the committee at this particular time, and we are slightly concerned at the approach to gender-based violence of these papers, the policies as they currently are drafted. Some concerns were raised by APCOS in the meeting that they held with yourselves last week, and we would love to just add our voice in the same vein. It's really about the mention of gender-based violence, whether it is prioritized in these papers, and how it is really integrated into the transformation of the police service and to what extent it is being considered as a priority point, and to what extent there is a consciousness of really what kind of shifts need to take place in order to improve performance in these areas. Then there's the Firearms Control Amendment Bill, again specifically in the context of domestic violence and gender-based violence in general. There is a possibility, I think, with this piece of legislation to avoid a lot of tragedy and to avoid especially intimate partner femicide as well as intimate partner femicide suicide, as we saw at the Alexander Police Station and other cases that have been in the media of late. And so we need to be critically engaging with the question of whether the current approach to how firearms and domestic violence relate to each other is that approach that we have in the firearms supply currently is working. And if it's not working, what do we need to do to change it and to make it more efficient and more effective? So just in conclusion, just to look at some final recommendations. I think one of the things that we would like to, we want to recommend for consideration to the police, I think this was prompted by the Marquee killing, but you also saw the Skaper case that is referred to, where in that particular matter there were 9 attempts which are documented by the police to act on a protection order, which didn't happen and resulted in one of the women in that household being burned to death. So on that basis, we would like to suggest that the police and the civilian secretariat consider establishing an independent panel to review all homicides involving a protection order. Because sometimes it's not women who's killed, it's children in the household who are killed instead. So we'd like to see an independent review panel comprising SAT, comprising CSB, and comprising independent experts from domestic violence organisations who should review every single case where a woman or a child died and there was a protection order. We don't have more recent data, but in 2009 we could see that 5%, or 1 in every 20 of the women who were killed that year by her intimate partner, died being in possession of protection order. And we need to understand if the death could have been prevented as a result of police negligence, or if there's a category of victims with a particular risk and who needs particular kinds of protection to be put in place. We need to understand that better. There's already a child homicide review panel, so I think if we were to consider something like that, it would not necessarily be a shockingly strange and unusual policy intention. We would also add to this, I think, in an investigation for this panel is to also look at cases where police officers kill their female partners. But that's also within the purview of this particular panel. I think we've spoken a little bit about the need to look at the new CSP policy and its approach to quality of services. The other thing it also talks to is the need to develop some kind of supporting policy framework for domestic violence, and it came up in the LRG presentation. At this point, only government departments with a legal obligation to deal with domestic violence and who is available on a 24/7 basis is the police. So we have no obligations on the Department of Social Development to provide shelters, to provide funding to organizations. We have no obligations on the Department of Health to take any kind of statutory intervention. We also note that the Domestic Violence Act makes very clear that the courts can pay for sheriff's fees if they put a means test in place. The courts, the Department of Justice has never gotten around to actually putting that means test in place. So I think there's a need to start looking at what is it that the other departments are doing and not doing in order to support the police's implementation of the act. And we need to have a comprehensive policy framework to support the policing of domestic violence, which also needs to take into account some of these new innovations the police are introducing. For instance, the domestic violence officer is not part of the legislative policy at this point of view. So there needs to be some sort of system that if the police are going to do that, that's now put into policy so it can be accurately assessed and measured and reported on. Because I think at the end of the day, monitoring and review is not just about punishment, it's also about learning. What are people doing that's making a difference and that is working well?
Another recommendation we'd like to make is the Zolani Khayelitsha Commission's report. We understand and appreciate that the Khayelitsha Commission and its report might be controversial to some, but we do feel that the investigation that was done with regards to the Domestic Violence Act and its implementation and compliance with the Act did yield very valuable recommendations. The Women's Legal Centre, together with Ms. Benton, laid some evidence before that particular commission, and we had the site of the documents supplied by the South African Police Service at the time. And we have also similarly had sight of the recommendations, and we think that they are worth your consideration and are definitely worth implementing, not just in the context of Khayelitsha, but perhaps nationally. And then a next recommendation, to make it easier to, I think, get some consistent and timeless reporting in terms of the Domestic Violence Act and to get compliance with that legal mandate to report on how the Act is being implemented, we think that it could well be appropriate for the committee to include reporting in terms of Section 18 of the DVA as a standing item on your agenda so that it is something that comes up every year, and it is something that is never really allowed in to fall by the wayside. And similarly, we really welcome the opportunity to be able to participate and to be able to comment on these kinds of reports, and we believe that civil society can continue to augment the capacity of the committee in terms of providing useful and valuable information about what is happening on the ground, what clients are experiencing, really trying to bring in the voice of victims. And how we are seeing these implementation plans and programs being rolled out in practice and whether they are having a successful impact on domestic violence in South Africa. And so we really would welcome future calls for comments on Section 18 reports and stand ready to assist you and to work together with yourselves as well as the South African Police Service going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Members, I know there's a lot of issues being raised, but we said that the problem was vacated the venue, but what we will do is that we continue with the session Tuesday 10. Because SAPS has got a very substantial presentation as well as Secretariat, as well as IBET. So we'll have to interact, and I think there's a lot of questions. I don't know about the availability of the NEO. Maybe they can't come raised, we don't want to put additional cost on you, but we will continue with the sessioning on Tuesday 10, get the such presentation next, then the civilian secretariat, and as well as IFIT, and then we'll go to the issues. Because I think the purpose also of this exercise, and it's well illustrated in this presentation, is we must ensure that the weight of responsibility is not only the secretariat and SAPS. The other role plays, other government departments must come to the margin. And I think that's going to be important. You should also maybe look at the legislation. And that's also, I think, also the amendment of the national structure. So there's a lot of proposals that I think that we can positively use to deal with the issues that's been raised by the two presentations. So thank you very much to the civil society. Thank you very much to the SAPS. Provincial Commission building here on Tuesday, and also to the Civilian Secretary. Sorry that you're not going again. Thank you, Johnson, also to iPad, but we'll continue then with the session on Tuesday. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.